The following shiur is being recorded for TorahDownloads.com, a project of the Yehuda Mann Foundation, Le'ilui Nishmas Yehuda Aryeh ben Yoshua Yakir.
We spoke last time about choosing a community, a rav, a kehillah, and so on, and we pointed out some of the challenges of doing that because of the extraordinary different nature of the community and in a broad sense, or yeshiva community, which is kind of very, very homogenous and very specific. I want to touch on a few more nekudas relating to that transition and with its challenges. If a person will be called upon to volunteer time and effort to the shul or community, in as much as the community folks down the shul. The some people love it. It gives them a sense of empowerment. There's some people dread it and avoid it. But at the end of the day, part of responsibility towards a community is, besides money that you're giving, it is also giving the time to be part of the people who do things, or organizing things, taking care of things, giving shurim, whatever it is. Person has all of those. Those are some of the responsibilities. There's a klal that I think people are painfully aware after a while, that if good people don't step up to the plate, the people who do step up to the plate are less than the best. And it's a lot the fault of the people who didn't step up at the right time. It's a balance. A person has a lot of things, and you know, if he's got things going in terms of his own family, in terms of work, it's kind of overwhelming. But there's got to be a place for giving some time for community. And if a person feels he's effective and he's good, then if he doesn't do it, it's going to be done less than best, and in a sense, the person not stepping up to the plate carries part of the blame. The challenge of being Adam Lechaveiro in a community is greater than in a yeshiva setting by a few powers. First of all, the reason is the lack of homogeneity. So whereas in a yeshiva setting, since the group is fairly homogenous, people think alike, what's considered right is fairly similar, what's considered wrong is fairly similar. So it's easy, there's sort of an unspoken mutual standard of right and wrong. On a community level, there is an incredible amount of different people with genuinely different perspectives on life. You have people who may have personality disorders. Statistically, if you have a community of 300 people, there will be X amount of people with personality disorders who are really off the charts in terms of their basic senses. A person who's paranoid, a person who's power hungry, a person who's, and so on. And it's very challenging to deal with it in a way that is appropriate. Giving in and just kind of letting everybody do what they want to do is destructive, but blowing up emotional tantrums, you know, fanning an issue, those create tremendous explosions. So what happens is there was a small issue, and it has a domino effect, and it becomes a massive explosion. It takes time and chachma to understand, first of all, to deal with the other businesslike. The worst part of it is when the emotions get slipped in. So let's say you have somebody who is, he's power hungry, he's a megalomaniac of sorts, and he comes and tells you that he really feels he could be the Rav of the Shul, he could be the Chazan, he could be the Gabbai, he could be anything, he's better than him, and so on and so forth. Now, you can make a mental note to yourself and say, this person has got a different sense of reality. We need to make sure that he doesn't get into any position where he will make other people's life really miserable. But being drawn in emotionally and blowing up at the person is going to be by far worse than any destruction a person himself can do, because these things have a tremendous domino effect. Some people are looking for a fight, some people have been upset at this person, some people have been upset at you, some people said that you said this, some people said that you said the other, and so on and so forth, and the thing becomes a major blow up over something which could have been minor. So to have seichel and understand what is the person I'm dealing with, what are the appropriate needs to deal with him, how does one deal with him, and yet not become sucked up emotionally with it, is a very, very important tool. It's an important tool in a lot of areas in life. But here especially, when this sort of a cabin fever with everybody together in one place and together at the same meetings and together at the same issues, that a person blow up at the other person. A halacha that becomes extremely useful is Hilchos Lashon Hara. Whereas before a person is in a community, a person thinks Lashon Hara is like a tzitzkis, you begin to realize that on a communal level, the Hilchos Lashon Hara are the basics for keeping things smooth, because anything you say will make the rounds. You can take it as a given. There are no secrets. It will spread. It will get distorted from what you said. It will have a rebound effect. And what will happen is you will have told your friend Chaim in confidence that so-and-so is mean and cheap. And Chaim will tell in confidence someone else, who will tell his wife, who will feel it's a big mitzvah to spread this around, who will spread it around, and somebody will come back to Chaim and say, you know, I feel I need to tell you this because everybody's talking on your back. It seems that someone will spread the rumors that you're cheap, and then he calls back you, and it becomes, and then you lie, and you say you didn't tell your friend, you said it on his own, and your friend calls you back and says, how could you do this to me? Lashon Hara on a communal level becomes an explosion. Just because of the way things are. And a person needs to understand every word you said will come back to haunt you. Bear that in mind. It's like a trained politician knows never to say anything that he could be pinned down with. Never say anything that you will have harata if everybody knows you said it. Because assume that it's a given, it will happen that way. So we spoke about a community and the fact that unless you're living in a place like New York that has 100 shuls, the community will be the shul with the rav and etc. and so on and so forth. There's a bigger picture, and that becomes more nebulous. Let's give a muscle for it. In Klaiso's times, you had Beis Av, you had Shevet, you had Klal Yisrael. Today we have a community, a tzibur, a kahala kadisha, a kehila, and halachically it has real standing. I mean, tons and tons and tons of tshuvas from Rishonim's time about a kehila that made gzeiros and takanis and charamim and chiyuvim and so on and so forth, the binding and how it's binding and so on and so forth. Tons of tshuvas from about this, and there always were written about it. That's on that level. What happens if we try to go one notch up and to make a sort of pan-union of Klal Yisrael? it was at various times attempted. Meaning, once the Reish Galusin came out of, it stopped being and so on, the idea of having many communities under one banner. There was the Vad Dalet HaRatzos, which was in Europe. This was the four countries, Lithuania and Russia and so on, that banded together to form a sort of union of kehillas. which would enable activities beyond the reach of any particular kehillah, especially takanas and so on. There were attempts such as Agudas Yisrael to create that same type of all-inclusive communal structure. It would become something that would include many kehillahs, and obviously its power and its effectivity would be far beyond any particular group. That was sort of an attempt. There comes again advantages and disadvantages with it. The advantages are obvious. You have the strength of many, you have the diversity of different communities, you have the input of many big people. The problems are, and Klal Yisrael doesn't seem quite yet able to adapt that model. Even the Vadal Ratzis was effective, but they dealt with very specific takanis and batidinim and so on. The Hasidim were able to form multi-city communities by virtue of having an all-powerful Rebbe there. So Ger Chassidim, no matter where they lived, every Ger Shtibel owed 100% fidelity to Ger. Who I didn't Alexander, who I didn't Satan was one community and so on. That was the Metzius, that the power of a very, very all-powerful Rebbe could create. But could you have a union of many people together, especially if problems are common? What about today, Bizman Azeh, where the issues that one community faces are faced by many communities, by all communities? So an attempt was made to some degree. There is an institution like that. Well, Agudas Yisrael is a very specific institution, but Agudas had its issues and its splits and so on. But the sense of the Gedolim together, creating takanis and gzeiris and making decisions and policy decisions and so on. It's a dream that's only partially realized. The issues are, as you increase the diversity, you lose its effectivity. The more you're trying to include different people, you have to. For instance, when all the Litvaks got together, they could make a whopping cherem on Hasidim. Not that in any way this is implying that it was a good thing, but they could do it. When you're including Hasidim also, you can't. Okay, so now you can only deal with issues that deal with everybody. It's also very undefined. A community is defined. Let's pick out Wichita, Kansas has one shul, one rav. Everybody is part of a community. There's halachic status granted that community. But what exactly is this Olam HaTorah? What exactly is the Haredi world? It's not defined 100%. Not all the members. There's no membership dues. Aguda has a structure of Metzos Gola Torah, but everyone understands that the Gedolim are not there, and you know maybe not everybody there is ranks the same. Not everyone ranks the same.
I came to say my goodbyes. I'm going now.
Okay. Everyone is it's not the same. One Gadol who actually left said he didn't think that everybody should have an equal vote, and also it's very unclear the mandate they have. It's also very difficult when you're centrally located to assess the different needs of every community and the different challenges. So for instance, the internet might be a terrible danger in one place, it might be necessary even in a second place, and it might be a God-given tool in a third place. It might be for certain things it's good, for certain things it's bad. How do we deal with people in a shul who are not shomer Torah mitzvahs? In some communities, the right thing to do is to make a clear division. In some communities, to reach a compromise. In some communities, to be embracing and welcoming. The issues become large. the also it's a vague sense of process, especially today where the Medrash Zolotoy and Aguda have become less powerful because of the split off of Degel and so on, because of the different political issues. Any time the Gedolim get together, there's a general takana, there's a general getting together, but not clear when who gets together. It's not clear how much is simply a relying on what people in the field feel and just sort of is validating them or personally investigating, looking into it. Very, very unclear issues. So, and its effectivity is varies. There are some issues that, I mean, you even find times of Chazal, it's a takana that Rova Tzibri Cholamot Bo. But there's an attempt, though, very strong to do these things because it's helpful. One Rav in a town doesn't have the power and the strength to enact things, even if he feels they're right. But when you have many Rabbanim of many towns together, many Gedolei Torah, and they feel strongly about a certain way, it carries a lot of weight. You're able to get a lot more people on the boat. You're able to, especially in a place like New York, where everybody's dancing from shtiebel to shtiebel, you're able to say, well, wherever you belong, if you're Shlomo Emunah Yisrael, this is what you should be doing, and so on. Those are the advantages of it. And it has its issues. I'm sure people, I need not explain the issues, but there isn't really much else to do. The reality is we do need to have an organizational structure that includes many communities. The issues and problems faced today by Chai Yisrael are not limited to one community. Internet doesn't affect Wichita, Kansas, specifically, in Los Angeles, California specifically. It affects everybody. Standards in schools, issues with different offenders, all of these things affect everybody. And the resources of a large community, of a large group of people together, are more than any one. You don't want to have a patchwork of different standards, different places, and so on. And you want to try to have some sort of sense of a standard. Yes?
I mean, wasn't that sort of, they were saying that a patchwork of different standards is what you had in Europe.
Yes.
So,
and in Europe,
hundreds of years.
But that wasn't so hard because each community, people never set foot out of community. The range that a typical person went was 10 miles, and you had, the Rav would usually be the Rav of a city and the Galilos, which means the surrounding countryside. Most people never left that countryside. Most people's business was, you know, with the farmers in that countryside. Mm-hmm. There really wasn't such a terrible need. It wasn't such a terrible problem to have the different standards. But today, where you go to Florida vacation, you send your kid to Chicago for school, you travel to Eretz Yisrael, and your daughter is in seminary in Eretz Yisrael. You have business that you're doing people in Los Angeles. It's not. The world is very, very, very small today, and for the world to have, for Klai Yisrael to have a crazy patchwork of different standards is difficult. Especially, let's take issues of issues, Gittin, Kedushin, Geirus, those really, really create havoc. Yes?
I guess, the underlying question is also this: the category of Gedolim, who has membership, you know, how is that decided, who makes the call?
Before, it's obviously a very, Medrash Gedolei Torah was a body that was self ordaining. In other words, they would approve new candidates and bring them in. Today, the reality is different people who have strong standings in a large tzibur. So the Marshal, the Ger Rebbe, has a very chashuv tzibur that sees him as the Rebbe, so he's the Matzah Torah. Panavij Yeshiva, the Chashuv Yeshiva, the Rosh Yeshiva, who's looked up and revered by the Panavij, is on the Matzah Torah. And so on. So usually it's a product of being that it's many tzibur together, it is people whose voice is meaningful to a large tzibur. can a sociologist figure out how it is that certain names come from it and so on? No, but Lemaisa, that's the way it is. There's a sort of a peer recognition. Reb Leib Shteyman, I remember many, many years ago when Reb Shach was getting older, and he told people, if you want an Eitzah Haguna, go to Reb Leib Shteyman. I heard the name many years ago when Reb Shach was still in his prime. He told people, talk to him, he will set you straight. So there's a general sense, the Chazin Shreit Klal Yisrael has a feeling for who the Gdolim are. It's a problem because anything that's not a rational, tangible process is very hard to identify. But there's a general sense that these are the people we look up to. And as Takanas and Xeris go, a person needs to understand two things. Anytime you're part of a klal, you're going to have to give up certain things for the Tovas HaKlal. So let's say, for the most people, this is a good takana. For me, it's not a good takana, and the reason doesn't apply. But if I don't keep it, other people are also not going to keep it. So it's important to bear in mind that a person, when he makes a decision about shtolling to one of those broad takanas and so on, that he is either strengthening the institution of Klal Yisrael or weakening it. The concept of Klal Yisrael exists only under the banner of common leadership. And if a person rocks the boat, or the person drills a little hole under his place, he is having a bad effect. Let me give you an example. Television was assured by Gdolim B'Shaito, and the reasons were obvious. Now, a person may make a case that television itself is not a Chefetz of Isser, doesn't say anywhere that it's Asser, and if a person is very careful with himself and he watches only the things that you can and should watch and so on, there's nothing wrong with it. But the fact that everybody took it on as being something that is not good gave it a strength that people today, or a yeshiva person, doesn't even think of having it. It's something that, you know, he may occasionally go see it somewhere, but he's in his house, he wouldn't want it. The strength of the numbers is very palpable. Many other takanas over the years, it's hard to remember because it's not written down anyplace and so on, but I remember over the years there was fights about belonging to Board of Rabbis and the Gdolim came out strong against it. People did listen. And today, that's the way it is. There are other takanis that flail, that they kind of, a little yes, a little not, and this, that, the other one, they were serve against videos, and doesn't seem to have affected it terribly much. I guess that falls in the get of Xerish and Sevich Olamantoy. But a person has to understand, it's not the perfect process that one might have thought as a young boy, but it still is something. It's the fact that we can have a consensus, and whether the details are all there, and whether everybody was informed of all the details, and whether did they sit together and listen to both sides and so on and so forth. It's not. There are issues with it, but by and large, when they make takanas, people are very, very. They think about it, and these are the people that we look up to as the Gdol Yisrael, and it gives us the chance to be Klal Yisrael. These are the people that my Rosh Hashiva is there, his Rosh Hashiva is there, his Rebbe is there. So it pretty much covers all of us, and there's an agreement to undertake something as a tzibur, and a person undermines the tzibur by knocking it. Yes?
Well, I mean, I guess the concern might be when there's conflict between a person's local kehila and the global kehila. In other words, it could be knocking the global kehila by saying, I'm not going to listen to a certain takana, but it might be strengthening one's immediate kehila.
So that's an issue, and that's an issue for the Rav, or for a Rav in a community. The Rav needs to be able to straddle both sides. The Rav is the person who most keenly is aware of his local community's needs. Let me give you an example, just where takana was done that way. there was many, many, many years ago in Eretz Yisrael, there was a ban against Bank Leumi. Bank Leumi was engaged in building a hotel on a cemetery, and the government got together and they told everyone to take their money out of Bank Leumi. The Ger Rebbe at the time, who was a Binim, was an extremely down-to-earth, practical person who really knew the needs, and he added a clause to that takana, except for villages that only have a Bank Leumi there. In other words, yes, it's very nice in Yerushalayim where you have 8 banks next to each other and a pizza store all vying for your business, so you can choose this store, that store, or the other store. If they're not Bank Leumi, Bank Hapoalim, not Bank Hapoalim, Bank Discount, whatever it is. But what if you're in a town and it's the only bank and you get everything there? It's you can't. So the addition to that, to make it, you know, to take into account the needs for a small community, was there. Many times they will, you know, there will be a clause for exceptions for broader community for different situations. It a lot has to do with the interface of your Rav with the broader community. That's why it's another facet that's important, is that he sees himself as part of a larger community, as an Olam HaTorah, Olam HaChassidus, Olam of something that he's part of it. Even though on the local community level his word is final, but he himself needs to see himself as a family of a greater conglomeration of families. So that's the, and it's very easy to knock takanis, because by definition they tend to be broad-based. They tend to affect you negatively. Whatever takan is, you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that, you shouldn't do the other thing. There is no police force to really enact it. So it might be scoffed at, might be laughed at, but a person needs to understand, if we're talking about Klal Yisrael and Am Yisrael, all those beautiful words, Klal Yisrael exists when they can get together to do things that are right. And this is a case where they need to the sacrificing your own needs and preferences for the good of the klal is where it comes in. Yeah.
Rabbi, I know the Gemara always talks about when Chazal would institute a takana, they wouldn't release the reason for that for, like, I think it was the first year or something to that effect.
Yeah.
People might start human fact-check in that. And
yeah.
Is that part of why, you know, people don't see necessarily so much process behind the kind of that sort of, like, you don't really know exactly.
I want to be realistic. I would like mine and our emunah's home to base on realities. Let's give a picture, and it's something I actually was discussing with people recently. Your typical gadol is expected to be Rosh Yeshiva and to say shiurim at least every week, a shir klali for chashvei olam. He's expected to raise money and keep his yeshiva afloat. Today, that's you're talking about a few $1 million for a typical yeshiva. He's expected to give time for his talmidim, not to run his shiurim out. He's expected to give them time to talk to them about learning, to talk to them about problems, etc., etc. Now he's expected to take part in klal. So the internet issue, he's expected to be part of a group of a dozen rabbanim who are going to judge the internet issue. Is it humanly possible to do all of it? Is it humanly possible to be full-time Baal Torah, fundraiser, personal advisor, and sitting as a board of directors of a major corporation called Klal Yisrael? I mean, and give it the time that you would like to have in a process. It's a problem. There are, you know, the real answer is no. Yes, there are certain gedolim like Reb Chaim Meiser, whose memory was infallible, whose grasp was not unhuman. He could carry on 5 conversations at the same time, never forgot anything, and had the patience of a saint, and had no family of his own. He had one daughter who died, unfortunately, before she was married. And yes, but that's not right. That's not right to expect it of every Adam Gadol. You know, the Chaim Meiser was once in a who knows how long. And people have the limitations. You can't expect all of it. So the two points to be made about this. So first thing, I like people to be realistic. Understand, anybody who's in a position of rabbanis, it's also, I spoke to somebody, I had an idea, I felt a certain inyan about, I felt something was very lacking on a large scale, and I tried to interest a few rabbanim in doing something. And they all told me, they said, do you want me to take away real time from my community and go to his coffee? I don't have the time to do it, and I don't think it's right to do it. I get paid a salary by a community to be available, to think about their problems. The problem that they're talking about is a real problem. It needs an organization. It's just, but I can't, and they're right. So there is a real issue. The flip side is, but that's as good as we can get. What are the other choices? We do need sometimes, we need to make some takanas about the internet. We need to make some takanas about this and that. The real issue is, and the real Achilles heel, I think, is we don't have today executive people. It's like in a corporation. You have a board of directors, and basically their job is, these are people who are very intelligent. We assume they're very intelligent. We assume that they understand the business well. We assume that they can do two things. They can set broad policy, approve broad policy, and see that it looks as if the corporation is being run well. But they're not running the corporation by any sense of imagination. They're dependent on the managerial level, who are actually running it. Their job is to make sure these people are honest, that the presentation that they make makes sense, that the documents back it up, and so on. That's as good as you can expect. Today, there was a generation, you had people of Rabbi Moshe Scherer's caliber, of Rabbi Naftali Newberger's caliber, who were at management level, that they were impeccably honest, they were shrewd, they understood people, had a very, very great intuition for who, what, when, and where, and the Anashim Golem could count on them. If they said it's a problem, it was a problem. If they said this is an appropriate remedy, it was probably an appropriate remedy. And big rebbes had gabbayim like that. For those of you who were in that Yisrael, the five ger rebbes had a gabbay named Chanina Schiff, who passed away 2 or 3 years ago. Chanina Schiff was one of the wisest, most discreet people who had no agenda of their own, were the rebbes' eyes and ears, hands, mouth, and really made the Rebbe's functioning possible. The Lubavitcher Rebbe had a Yid called Chotkov, Rebbe Yitzchak Chotkov, who was an extraordinary person. Same qualities. Shrewd as they come, discreet as they come, highly effective, and no agenda of his own. His whole agenda was to be a Shliach Neman of the Rebbe. That is a key piece that's missing. And it's going to have to come from the ranks of people who are not Gedolei Torah, but have many abilities. Usually those people would make fantastic businessmen. And Rav Neuberger once told me, I was with him on a flight, and he was thinking, reminiscing a bit, and he said, 40 years ago someone made him a phenomenal offer to enter a business partnership, and he said today he would have been an extremely wealthy man had he done it. Instead he chose to live in an apartment on Yeshiva Lane, as big as the Rebbe's apartment, and to run the Malchus HaTorah from there. He not only ran Eretz Yisrael, he helped almost every yeshiva that needed help, because he was as shrewd as they come, and as discreet, and as L'shem Shemayim. This is a challenge for somebody out there to pick up that gauntlet. Those people usually will do very well in business. They can even give a lot of tzedakah and be honored at dinners. But the whole machine is not going to run without that transmission. So the real issue is finding people of a caliber that they do the legwork. They know really what's going on. They are they have no personal agenda. Their question is not, how will I benefit from this, and so on. And they bring it to the attention of people and put the facts down clearly, and the options that are viable, and so on. Being a Gadol Torah does not mean that you need to know how to make things work practically. It might be. There are zochel v'om habe, but it's not a requirement. And what is a requirement is that the person's sensitivities be very toradic, and his sense of things, when he has the facts in front of him, is right. But if he don't have the facts in front of him, and if he can't trust the person who's presenting those facts, either because he's inept, or because he's not honest, or he has some agenda, then we're going to have a real problem. I personally think that that's the Achilles heel of our generation. We weren't machshev enough, these people who were, who understood, were chachamim, and were mevatel themselves, and they could say, I presented the things correctly, and basically the sense was that it's not appropriate, it's not approved, and so on and so forth. On the one hand, we need to know the reality. The reality is that most isurim, kol kores, takanes, etc., get started by a person who's very, very passionate about it. Not a gadol dafka, but a person who's very passionate. And he stirs up a pot and runs around convincing people that this issue is right, gets together some people, and presents it to Gdolei Torah. This person might be a very L'shem Shemayim, this person might be a very big Chacham, this person might be a person who has the good of Kali Yisrael at his heart, and this is a wonderful way to do it. It may not, but that's the way things work. And when he gets together, I'm L'shem Gdolim, and he convinces them, based on the edus that he presents, on the appraisals of things that he and others present, they will make a decision which way to go with it. So the quote-unquote system, which is more of it's a social dynamic rather than a legal system, is flawed. But the other hand is, it's the only way we really have to go with it. There's no other, if we're to meet the issues of our generation, in Eretz Yisrael, it's very acute because you need to elect people to the Knesset, so that's why it's so acute, and that's why you've got to join the bandwagon or else you don't have representation. In America, it's not so acute, but understand that there are some people that make a deliberate, they're leitzanim, they live off flaunting takkan and so on. There's something wrong about it, there's something deeply wrong about it, because you're destroying the possible fabric of Achaz Kaiso. And the truth is, the quote-unquote leadership, if it's not going to be an Asim Golem, it's going to be people write blogs, people write editorials and newspapers, organizations that are organizations, with mid-level administrators proclaiming different things. As flawed as the process might be, it's still, in terms of the integrity and the Das Torah of the big people, it's still a better fit than people that are much smaller than them. So I do believe it's important to have open eyes and understand the flaws in the system, and I do believe that it's important to understand the necessity of it, because as time goes on, the problems become pan-Jewry. It's not limited to any one community. No one community can deal with issues. It's like trying to treat a disease in one community today by quarantining sick people. But if the other communities are not quarantined and traffic falls freely, you can't do anything. You need to work as a group. And it is also a remiss to the beginning of some sort of sense of Kali Yisrael. So last week we spoke about community in a very narrow issue, in a very narrow sense. A rav and a shul in a community has one rav, one shul. And today we spoke about community in a much broader sense, which is kind of Kali Yisrael.